The following is a recording of Governor William Bill Richardson, introduced by Bob Burt, presenting North Korea Strategy for Engagement on February 2nd, 2018.
If I was where you are sitting, this is what I'd be thinking. How soon can Bob get off the stage so we can hear Bill Richardson? So I'm going to be very brief about a man who really needs no introduction. The highlights of Bill Richardson's career was a U.S. Congressman for 14 years, U.N. Ambassador to the U.N., Secretary of Energy, and the governor of New Mexico for two terms. Throughout his career, he's been very involved internationally, obviously with the UN experience, but he's been particularly involved with North Korea. And over the course of the years, he has made 8 trips into North Korea, and he has negotiated the return of 4 North Korean hostages. So with his distinguished career and knowledge of North Korea, we could not find a better speaker to talk about what many see as our most serious security problem. Ambassador Richardson.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Bob. I just like to say to Lee, you're not supposed to outshine the speaker. And to Bob Burt, I tell you, this guy, you've got the best. I know Mr. Forbes also is in the program, or head of the program committee. But Bob Burt is a great program speaker. He's relentless. He's called me every day for the last 7 years. and he showed up yesterday. Barbara and I, my wife, we came in from New Mexico, and you know, your airport here is not very big, so there was Bob, and I don't know if he was there to greet me or to make sure I showed up. But thank you so much. You know, when you're in politics, by the way, I noticed that Bob did not mention my ill-fated presidential run. I didn't last very long. I used to come in third in the primaries. I remember the last time I was in South Carolina, I was at a church in Columbia, an African-American church. I knew then I wasn't going to do well. You know, Obama was running that year, and that was supposed to be funny, but I guess and I promise I will keep my remarks bipartisan, because I realize the only Democrats here are myself and that guy in the kitchen. So I'm kidding, I'm kidding. I know. I also want to recognize a former Secretary of Energy who was my predecessor, Hazel O'Leary. I know she's here. And Hazel, where are you? I guess she already left. Marilyn Shaver, who's a dear friend from our college past, thank you again for having me here. North Korea, the biggest threat that we have. What do we do about it? I'm going to try, because I know this is a very sophisticated audience. Lee has briefed me on a lot of your backgrounds and what you've done in your life, and very impressive. So what I'm going to try to do is highlight where I see the main issues are, and then a little bit of my experience. I've been there 8 times, as Bob mentioned. But you really don't know what is happening, especially with the new leader, Kim Jong-un. Nobody's met him, except Dennis Rodman. And I called Rodman, because I get asked by a lot of people, because I've been there so long, well, what does Kim Jong-un know? I have no idea. But talking to Rodman, I was unable to get, you want to find out a little bit. It was not successful. Anyway, what's happened in the last week, just this week? that dovetails around what's happening in North Korea. First, a very nice scene on television last night, the Olympics in South Korea. North Korean and South Korean athletes possibly marching together, arriving at the airport at the same time. A nice scene which was prompted by the president of South Korea, who was elected on wanting a dialogue with North Korea, and Kim Jong-un of North Korea accepting the possibility of a dialogue in the course of the Olympics, sports, maybe soft power, a way for the countries to get together. Or was Kim Jong-un simply baiting the United States, saying, I'm going to make some peace moves of my own? Who knows? But still, a very nice scene. Secondly, the dismissal of the poor young man in Hawaii who went ahead with this emergency call that was false. But it really ratifies the importance and the need to be sure that a North Korean missile does not hit continental United States or Alaska or Guam, but really making sure the security issue is at the top of the priority. Third, Victor Cha, a colleague of mine who worked in the Bush administration as the president's top North Korean advisor, a South Korean, a Korean-American scholar, Republican, considered for ambassador to South Korea, but then Victor sends an op-ed piece in the Washington Post saying, I didn't get the job because I was not positive about the policy that the administration was pursuing, which is give them a bloody nose, the preemptive military strike. But you don't know, there's always two sides to every story. The administration said, well, he didn't get the job because there was something in his vetting, as some businesses in South Korea that were a conflict, who knows? And then the president's State of the Union address. He was pretty strong in North Korea, talking about the threat. He didn't use the nuclear button issue, which was good. He didn't call Kim Jong-un a rocket man, which I thought was a good move. But at the same time, you know, it highlighted the top foreign policy national security issue in the United States for our country, and actually for a peninsula that is vital to our national security. So let me go straight to what are the options. In other words, all of you here have heard some distinguished speakers and your backgrounds, business, et cetera. What do you do about it? What are the options? You know, they say that North Korea is the issue of bad options. They're all bad because you don't know how they're going to turn out. But I think you've got to try them all in the context of what should we do? What should a new president do when dealing with these issues? First, the bloody nose option, the preemptive military strike. Let's hit them in one of their facilities to send them a message that we're not going to tolerate them developing additional nuclear weapons, that they may have about 31 now, or a missile capability that can reach the United States that they probably can do now, but not with a nuclear warhead that would detonate and harm the country. I think they're maybe 2 years away from that. What are the options there? The options are that the North Koreans will retaliate. Sure, we probably would have a military victory, but at the same time, collateral damage, 120 million South Koreans on the DMZ, 30,000 American troops in South Korea, 50,000 in Japan, a treaty with Japan and South Korea that we have to defend each other if there's an attack. North Korean artillery, very sophisticated, 1.5 million men in arms. Collateral damage, what we probably would have a significant military victory, but at what cost? That's the bloody nose option that is out there that, you know, the president seems to want to talk about all the time, his national security advisors. Yet you have a Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who seems to be pursuing an option of diplomatic talks, but possibly undermined by the President when he tries to do that. What is the second option? And I will give credit to the administration on this one. Strong sanctions, mainly by China. We've tried sanctions in the past at the United Nations, bilateral sanctions, military sanctions, sanctions that deal with economic issues, food. North Korea has huge sanctions on them directly from the United States. But since 90% of their commerce goes through China, we've always leaned on China to do more. China, do more. You want stability in the peninsula. China has not necessarily done that in the past, but whether it's pressure or trade-offs that the administration has pursued, China is putting more sanctions, oil sanctions, seafood sanctions, uranium sanctions, not allowing North Korean workers outside of North Korea, perhaps in China, to bring foreign exchange back. Those sanctions right now are in place, but the issue is China really enforcing them? Because they're right on the border, there's a lot of smuggling. My view is that these sanctions are stronger in this Chinese regime, but probably not enough. Option number three, which is the one that I think the Secretary of State is pursuing or trying to pursue, diplomacy. What does diplomacy mean in terms of North Korea? It basically means a dialogue between the foreign ministries or our military people or special envoys that try to say to each other, okay, North Korea, you know, you're shooting all these missiles, you're shooting all these detonations of nuclear devices. What do you want? What's your end game? And then the North Koreans with us, you know, President Trump, you want to blow us up? What is it that you want? This is something that right now is, I don't think, a very strong option, but one that I think the international community, certainly in South Korea, in Japan, would like the United States to pursue. But again, how do you frame that? The best way to frame it is to say, okay, US and North Korea, let's just have talks, no preconditions. Our two secretaries of state, perhaps, find out what each other wants. No preconditions in terms of, okay, North Korea, you don't do anything, we don't do anything, let's meet and see where it goes. The second diplomatic option is called a freeze for a freeze. A freeze on the North Korean part, not to shoot any missiles, not to detonate any nuclear devices. And the United States, perhaps because of our alliance with South Korea, we have enormous amount of military exercises. We cool down on some of the military exercises just for a short period of time and see if this freeze for a freeze is going to work. Many people say, well, you can't trust the North Koreans. True. Many people say, you know, what if there's a discombobulated error in this freeze for a freeze and somebody shoots at an American aircraft or a fishing boat from South Korea by North Korea? What is a miscalculation going to cost? Then there's the other option, which very few people talk about, and that's soft power options. You know, we all recall what happened with China in the Kissinger-Nixon days. Ping pong diplomacy at least got the countries to start talking again. There's discussions about perhaps sports. North Koreans loving basketball, loving international competition. In 2007, I was in North Korea at the request of President Bush, and we brought back seven remains of our soldiers from the Korean War. A very humbling experience, but one that the North Koreans have been eager to pursue in the past as ways to bring the countries together. Why? Not because they're benevolent, but they get foreign exchange from those prisoner bodies that we get back, about $70,000 per remain. That was a program that was viable, but it's been suspended because we said to North Korea, we're not going to have any new relationships with you unless you curb your nuclear proliferation, which they have not done. So those are the four options that I mentioned are on the table. Which one is going to win? Nobody knows, but at the same time, somebody hopes, and the world hopes, that no miscalculation takes place on either side and that we don't get into a war in a vital region of the world. What have the past policies been of our presidents to deal with North Korea? I'll go real quickly and try to describe those policies. And I know you've had ambassadors here that have been directly involved. Clinton administration. I wasn't part of these policies, but I was in the administration at the UN, Secretary of Energy, but they happened when I was a congressman and I first went to North Korea as a congressman to try to get two pilots out that had been downed by North Korean missiles. We were able to bring them back. One was perished, one died, but that was my first experience there, but it was as a member of Congress. What did Clinton try to do? He made a deal with North Korea. It was called the Agreed Framework. North Korea, you stop all your nuclear development. In exchange with Japan and China, we will give you nuclear power, two nuclear power plants. We'll give you food. We'll take off sanctions. It was called the Agreed Framework. For 9 years, it worked until the North Koreans cheated the ninth year and they started resuming their development of nuclear weapons. Critics say, you know, that's what started North Korean nuclear development. But those that are positive, and I'm one of those, at least for 9 years, they didn't develop any nuclear weapons, and there was relative stability in the relationship. It wasn't a good relationship. That was Clinton. George W. Bush started out very hostile policy. The Clinton policies don't work. We're going to try something new. We're going to be tough. We're going to get sanctions going. And we're not going to talk to him because when you talk to a bad regime, you're rewarding bad behavior. And that doesn't make sense. So that was the policy for several years. And then the Bush administration reversed their policy and said, okay, we're going to take sanctions, some sanctions away. We're going to take off North Korea from the terrorism list. Let's see if they respond. I thought that was a smart move. Let's see what they do with our new initiative towards you. Well, there were brief talks. I went down and got the remains back. The North Koreans wanted a response from the Bush administration. Okay, let's resume the military recovery program. I think the Bush administration held back. Nothing much happened. So the tension increased. Now we come to the Obama policies. Kim Jong-un takes over. Kim Jong-il, the father, who in the past we could make deals with. The father was a bargainer, not a rug merchant, but pretty close. All right, you do this, we do that. Then it was mostly in the era of political prisoners. I remember the North Koreans would say, okay, you want this American back? You want this political prisoner back? Somebody important, Richardson, is going to have to come get him back. You are not important enough. Let's try President Clinton. So Clinton went. President Carter. Carter went. The CIA director. They went and they got prisoners back. With Kim Jong-un, we don't know what he wants, and he has several Americans right now. He has three. So what do we do in the Obama administration? The Obama administration pushed a policy called strategic patience. What does that mean? That means that you put, I heard a few little titters there. You put a number of pressure points on North Korea. You put more sanctions on. You get other countries around the world to squeeze them. Put sanctions on North Korea. Don't give them missiles, trade, military equipment, in the hopes that they'll come back to the bargaining table. Well, they didn't. They didn't. Strategic patience, obviously, did not work. So President Trump comes in. We're going to have a new policy. Enhanced sanctions with China. We're going to try to get other countries around the world to really put trade clamps on North Korea. No trade at all. Inspect the cargo ships that get into North Korea. A tougher, aggressive policy mixed with his tweets at 5 a.m. His tweets that basically say, you know, Rocket Man, you're going nowhere. I've got a stronger nuclear button. Not necessarily traditional diplomacy, but a diplomacy that, you know, I don't think works, but maybe it'll result in something. You got to admit that traditional diplomacy in the past has not worked, but I worry because of these miscalculations. I know the North Koreans. Ego is huge for them. I remember one time I was in North Korea and President Bush referred to Kim Jong-il, the father, as a dwarf. He didn't like it, and I was reminded of that. You know, and I don't like the fact that President Trump is insulted either, because Kim Jong-un has done the same. So this kind of, you know, I'm tougher than you are. I'm going to find ways to deal with you. This high-level media diplomacy, I don't think, is the way to go. So let me go to, what do we know about Kim Jong-un? You know, what do we know if Dennis Rodman were able to tell us something? because he doesn't meet with anybody. He's had two meetings with foreigners, both Chinese envoys. What do we know he wants? What do we know about this guy? You know, everybody has tried to penetrate his activities, what he does. We've got an excellent intelligence community. I know we have a lot of intelligence people here. Don't quote me on everything, please. But I do think that this is something that would help us try to solve the puzzle. What do we know that he wants? One, which I think is good, he was educated in Europe and Switzerland, apparently learned a little English, apparently was a decent student, liked Western movies, sports, a little bit of a playboy. What else do we know? He's about 35 years old. He's vindictive. He doesn't like any competition. It seems his main reason to exist is to keep his power, to keep that power and not be dislodged. He's vindictive. He's killed his brother. He's killed members of his family. He shuffles his military around, trying to be worthy of his support. He's put all his resources on weapons, not on his people, not on his starving people. That's why his nuclear arsenal has risen to perhaps 31. His missile capability is very strong. His artillery, his army is very well equipped. He is not good to dissidents. There are gulags. There's human rights violation, mass graves. He doesn't make deals like his father. Again, like his father, you could, you know, all right, so what do you want? What do you want? What can we do? What can we do? All right, after this period of time, we do this. We don't know. He never responds. We've had, I was very involved in this young man named Otto Warmbier, who was from Ohio. By the way, I know the very strong connection here to the state of Ohio. This young man went to North Korea. He stole a political banner and then was given 15 years in prison. Then he dies. Something happens. He's tortured, bad medical training, equipment, and he comes back dead, virtually. And we were deeply involved in trying to get him back, and we didn't hear anything, when probably because the North Koreans didn't want to tell you that he was dead. So nothing makes this guy tick. We don't know what makes him tick. He's good at PR. I mean, I think this move with the South Korean Olympics is good for him. Makes him look like, well, I'm the one that's looking for dialogue. Probably not serious. So what about China? How does he react to China? Because everyone says, you know, a lot of our people, China can put pressure on North Korea. Well, it's going to work if North Korea responds to that pressure. And I know in talking to the North Koreans, they think they're the major power in Asia. And you know who do they want to deal with? Not China, not South Korea. They want to deal with us. They say to me, we're the two big boys in the region. We can work these things out. Let's have an alliance. Let's have an alliance, U.S., North Korea. I said, well, if I'm going to run for office, I'm not going to be for that one. But that's their mentality. Their mentality is one of a cult of personality. Everything emanates from the leader. And people say to me, well, is there a chance for regime change? Is there a possibility we can get rid of Kim Jong-un because he doesn't have domestic support? No, I can tell you no. I mean, there's blind loyalty to that family and to him. And, you know, when you're a North Korean and you get blasted every 3 hours every day with propaganda about, you know, the Pueblo incident, how we defeated the Americans, what a great society we are, the leader with all these flowers and these beautiful women surrounding him and shooting missiles, you know, you don't think outside. And when you're sanctioned and you can't see what you're missing, even in South Korea because of the control of propaganda, there's not much opportunity for dissent. So, what do we do? Now, this is the Richardson plan, which has gone nowhere. I've talked to the North Koreans. I talk to them maybe once every 2 months. They have a UN mission in New York. I've talked to the Trump administration at the White House, National Security Advisor, the Chief of Staff, State Department. You know, they're trying. They're good people. It seems one of their main jobs is try to contain the president. But but anyway, I think there's, you know, thinking out there that is going on. And I hope that it somehow works because it's so vital. So what would I do? What would I do? One, I'm a believer in this soft power issue. I think we should have no preconditions for talks. Just talk. Just sit down across a table or secretly or in a third country. Hopefully the Secretary of State. I think that he's moving in this positive direction with North Korea, his people, professionals at state. I think one of the things that you have in many of your speakers is professionals that know how to engage, that know other countries, other cultures. You know, if anything, if any criticism I have of Rex is that he's not relying on the Foreign Service as much as he should. In fact, I read yesterday that Tom Shannon, the highest ranking State Department officer, Foreign Service officer, is resigning, and I think that's good. So, no precondition in talks. Number two, a mutual freeze, a unilateral understanding that in order for negotiations to take place, the North Koreans cannot test more missiles nor nuclear devices, and maybe we hold off on the flyovers over North Korea. Maybe that is reduced that we do with the South Koreans. The second thing that I would do is a public gesture of goodwill. This could range from the return of the remains of our soldiers from the Korean War for burial to the freeing of the three American citizens. There are three Korean Americans there currently held in North Korean prison camps. You know, I presented these options. One of the things about the North Koreans, they never say no to you. I've proposed going there. My foundation was the last members of my foundation about 5 months ago were the last to go to North Korea. We exchanged discussions on this issue. We gave them some wheelchairs for some of their disabled people. We at least entered a dialogue. But the North Koreans, they never say no. They just don't answer you. That's the way, you know, some people in this country do too. But they never say no. It just, there's never any decision. Or they blast you in the media. Or there's something that sends a message that it's not going to work for an invitation both ways. And I think right now, the Trump administration is trying to decide on what to do, leaning a little bit, unfortunately, towards this bloody nose option, which worries me. You know, we've got a great military, and I worry about the retaliation. I worry about egos dominating a response. So I've tried to lay out these options as best I can. And I'd be most pleased, Lee, to is that 45? I've done 36 minutes. That's not bad. Huh? We'll have more questions, hopefully.